Josh has figured out a way to make our deadly serious program screechingly funny, and you're in for a real treat. He hasn't lost the true meaning of how deadly serious it is, but he's going to put a spin on it for us and his own story that's going to be very entertaining. So I give you Josh.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. And I'll just open this up with a prayer my sponsor taught me and a bit of a twist I put on it myself. It's just, breathe in God. Breathe out me. Breathe in Christ. Breathe out me. My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. And it's a privilege to be here with you all today. You know, I guess I'll just start in the beginning. You know, when I was 5 years old, one of the first memories I had, a friend took me in a bathroom and sexually abused me. And, you know, that, again, not related to drinking necessarily, but, however, that, again, I think started broken relationships in my life and was sort of a starting block for me in terms of connection that was very unhealthy. You know, when I was 9 years old, when I was about 5 years old, again, I was starting to get, getting conceptions of God. And I remember I actually grew up in a mixed household. So my dad was Jewish and my mom is Christian. And in order to let me decide which religion I wanted to pursue, they evenly divided my attendance to each one's respected house of worship. So like on the even Sundays of the month, my mom would take me to the church. And the odd Sundays of the month, my dad would take me to the outlets. So what that's thinking. So I love my dad, though. It was really cool. You know, when I was 5 years old, though, I had a babysitter come over. And she told me my dad was going to hell. And again, this was like really, that was a big deal to me as a five-year-old. And it started definitely an underlying a resentment towards a conception of a specific higher power. And again, I'm off to the races. When I'm about 13 or 14 years old, I discover my three main addictions, which was drinking, drugs, and addiction in the sexual area. And when I drank, the first time I really got drunk, I was about 13 years old, and I couldn't, 13, 14, I think 14, and I couldn't stomach like the hard stuff. I would always, I think I tried a few times, I threw up, but we mixed some stuff together, and it tasted enough like Kool-Aid to where I could handle it, and it changed everything. I mean, this opened up my eyes. It was like I was finally free. I was finally the person that I was supposed to be. And within 24 hours, I remember going to a grocery store with some friends, with a friend and his family, because I was on a lake trip with them, and I'm strategizing and contemplating how to steal wine from a grocery store. This is within 24 hours of my first drunk, right? So it's like I needed this stuff. It made me feel good, and it fixed something inside of me, right? And it didn't take me long to when I would go on vacations or be with friends. It was the missing ingredient. It made me a complete person. It fixed what was broken inside me and made me feel different from everybody else. The only problem was it wore off, right? I like the joke, you know, I only drank on special occasions, right? Like weddings, bar mitzvahs, Mondays. I knew I had to quit drinking when one of my friends came up to me. He's like, "Look, Josh, you've had about 12 shots since you've been here. I think you need to cut yourself off, put on a shirt, and stop trying to dance with every girl here." I'm like, "Why don't you shut the heck up? Learn to have fun. We're at the club." I'm like, "That may be true, Josh, but this is Sam's Club." But in all seriousness, it did get off the chain pretty quickly, right? And remember going on a beach trip, and this stuff just seemed like par for the course for me. I mean, I remember being out with people. I didn't feel like I was good enough. I drank some, and all of a sudden that was cured, right? And it just seemed like the problems were just a minor side effect that weren't that big a deal, you know? throwing up, you know, beside my bed, I was 16 or 17, that was not that big a deal. That was just something that happened, right? you know, going, I remember going to high school at a boarding school that was pretty close to here. And again, I had some pretty good options. I did pretty well at a school that I went to, and I had some decent options for boarding schools. But I went to this one school because I saw that movie Dazed and Confused, and I thought, I want my life to be like that. And so I literally, it was just like, I thought this is going to be this awesome, adventurous, wild, crazy, free time. So I go to this boarding school, and again, really quickly, it was like what I wanted it to be, you know, drugs, partying, rock and roll, dating more. It was exciting, and again, the stuff that happened as a result of drinking, it was never like my fault. It was just something that happened. I remember going to Athens, Georgia, when I was 17 years old, and I was stepping outside of a concert and had some you know, had a drink in my hand, and a cop came up to me when I was in a bush, and I was talking to my brother on the phone in a bush. I don't know why, that's like the most suspicious thing that I could be doing, but I did. And he looked at me and he said, "So what are you doing?" I said, I'm talking to my brother. He says, "Really? Where's your brother?" I'm like, why? Is there a right answer to this question? He's in Atlanta, Georgia. And so he gets me, I start talking to him. I don't remember exactly what was said, but I'm trying to explain myself. In the middle of my conversation, I just throw up all over this cop. You know, I think he may have dodged it, but I remember him saying, "You just threw up on my boots, man, my new freaking boots." And I tried to explain myself again. He took my license from me, and he starts to take down my information. And I told him, well, that's really not me. That's actually my twin brother. And that's not my address. This is really, I thought this was a kind of a good idea. And so he said, okay. And he actually bought it. I was like, man, I don't know if you should really be a cop. But he bought it. So he starts taking down my fake address, and he gets to my zip code, and I just totally botched the zip code. I mean, I probably was like 54321. I mean, something really stupid. And he stopped and looked and said, "You know, wait a minute, this is you. This is not your brother." So I end up going to jail that night. And again, 17 years old, it's like, this is just, oh, and I forget, when I tried to explain myself to him again, I threw up on this cop a second time. So that was not my fault though, right? I thought, oh, I'm just taking some medications, it's a complication, right? But it's like, whenever I drink, or a lot of times I drink, you know, the stakes just got higher and higher, and the problems kept getting worse and worse. And only an alcoholic, in my opinion, tries to prove to himself he's not an alcoholic. That's what I try to do all the time. So I always was so convinced with trying to prove that I was as smart or normal as other people, right? That alcohol, drugs, all that stuff weren't weighing me down just yet. You know, I couldn't go to movies with people when I was drunk. Well, I'd get out of the theater, I'd always try to brag I was smarter than you because I'd read the book. We'd get out of the movie, my friends would be like, "Josh, what'd you think of that movie we just saw?" I was like, "Well, it was pretty good, but if you wanted to challenge yourself, you would have done what I did and read the book." They'd be like, "You read Big Mama's House 3? Yes, I did. But, again, in all seriousness, so I go back to this school, and it's still exciting, man. I mean, it really was fun. I mean, I feel like I was really having a lot of exciting moments, living out the kind of fantasies of these addictions. I, you know, was dating the girl I wanted to date. I was partying. I was selling some drugs at school. And in fact, the only reason I was selling weed to my history teacher, and I, you know, it made me feel so cool about myself. And I, the only reason I passed the class is because I was getting high with them the night before the exam. So I knew nothing going into that test, so I answered every question with a question. It was like, "Who wrote the Declaration of Independence?" I was like, "Who smokes weed with his students?" So, I did, so that was happening, all kidding aside with the answer, but that really did happen, and that really was the reason I passed that class. And so it was all fun, it was all exciting, until I drank too much, I did too many drugs, and all of a sudden I got horrific, essentially exacerbated some underlying anxiety disorders I had. And I went from being this confident, comfortable, cool person who really felt like he was the master of his domain to every time I was in a conversation, this is the only way I could describe it, it felt like it was a game of chess or battleship, like something I had to get through. I was so horrifically uncomfortable with myself. I was so frightened about other people. I knew something was wrong, and I couldn't figure out what it was, but from that moment on, it became my quest to fix me, right? And I wasn't willing to think it was drug or alcoholism. Now, don't get me wrong, I tried to stop drinking because I thought that wasn't helping the problem, but I thought that beyond that, there was a cure for me, and what just this emotional inadequacy I was feeling. And so I would try to stay sober for stretches of time. But the problem was it would end in some horrific blow-up or nasty binge, right? Where I just cashed in all my chips. And I would try and I'd try and I'd try to white-knuckle it and I white-knuckle it. And then I'd have a horrific explosion. You know, something terrible would happen. I remember going to college. And again, the drinking just started going more through the chain. I started combining it with some things that were not good. I get an MIP in college, so you know, again, that's my second encounter with the law regarding alcohol. And I remember one time I essentially was going to visit College of Charleston, which I had gone to the school. I'd done well enough in college. I transferred over there, so I was going to visit, and I mean, it was just a, you know, once again, pushed my body to the limit. I came back to Atlanta, Georgia, after that trip, and was at a party or just hanging out with some friends, and I combined some things that I shouldn't have, and I wake up, and all of a sudden, I'm in the hospital, arms and legs strapped to the bed, a team of doctors staring over me. And I don't know how I got there. Essentially, I combined some stuff and then just blacked out and woke up there. Team of doctors standing over me. Eventually, I look at them and say, man, like, you know, I think the first thing I remember is them saying, man, just take it easy. Go back to bed. I wake up, and this is the broken version of this story I remember. I just remember looking at them and saying, can I go? And like, I mean, sure, I guess. Jeez, man, just take it easy. And again, I get back out, and that day I'm using, right? It just didn't deter me at all. So I go to the College of Charleston, and like I told you, there was this underlying emotional inadequacy. I just felt so uncomfortable with it myself. It was this horrific social anxiety. I used to feel like I was in control. I could, that's more charismatic. I could, you know, attract the relationships I wanted, romantic relationships I wanted, the friendships that I wanted. And don't get me wrong, while I still did have some relationships in my life, it just felt like I was so uncomfortable all the time. It was something I had to strategically earn. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. So I get to College of Charleston, and I'm trying to stay sober and just be a normal person, and I'm doing terrible there. So I think in order to fix this anxiety that I have, this depression, this anxiety, this obsessive compulsive disorder, like all this stuff that's swirling beneath the surface, I'm going to go get hypnotherapy in Florida by this guy who's supposed to be a guru for, I think, $750, and that'll fix me. Now, I'm not knocking hypnotherapy, but again, I don't think much for me is going to work if I'm not willing to address the true underlying disorder that's blowing everything up, which is drug and alcoholism. So, I go down there, this guy does his magic on me, I get back to College of Charleston, I think, you know what? I think he fixed me. And so, I go to this party, and I think, you know, is there a keg there? And I think I probably shouldn't drink anything because I don't want to undo what he did, right? I mean, he's probably fixed things. I don't want to undo what he did. So I'm in the party and things are going down, and I think, well, you know what? I wouldn't be normal if I didn't have one beer. I just got to fit in with people. So I have one beer. within, I think, 30 minutes to an hour, I had bought some illicit substances, or a illicit substance, and that was gone. And then, of course, I'm drinking more, going to my friend's house next door, doing more substances, of course, combining this with booze. This turns into a roaring bender that lasted, I think, the weekend. I ended up stealing from the people that mattered the most to me at the school. My supposed closest friends was stealing their prescription medicine from them, secretly doing it. Of course, you know, drinking, all that stuff. And it got to the point where I remember being at the top of this staircase and having a combination of some pills in my hand and thinking, if I take these, I might not wake up. You know, because it wasn't that uncommon to... a combination that landed me in the emergency room, Piedmont. So, without thinking, I just took it. And I don't know if it was life was so miserable at that point. You know, I mean, this is, I don't know if I was just dying to feel something because I couldn't feel anything. It was like my body just, I just couldn't get the high I wanted, you know. And this all started with one drink. One drink that turned into a horrific binge. That as a result, I remember coming to, by the grace of God, I was still awake, and these people looked at me lying on their couch, unconscious, you know, in a state of incomprehensible demoralization, and said, "You've got to go." They figured out what I'd been doing. They realized I'd been stealing from them. They said, "You got to get out of here." And I remember walking tail between my legs out of that house. And I left my license there, so I had to go get it the next day. And I remember walking back to that house. One of the people wouldn't even come down to see me. So this girl comes out. He's there with a bunch of people in the living room. And she hands me my license. And in front of everyone, she says, "So why'd you do it?" And I looked at her and I gave her the best answer that I could at the time, which was, "I don't know." And that was the truth, you know. It's like I've heard the phrase, "I'm not necessarily a bad person getting well," although what I did was definitely bad. I was, you know, a bad person getting good. I was a sick person getting well. I mean, I wasn't even getting well at that point. But you know, when I drank or did drugs, essentially I'm like a Rottweiler around red meat. I can not tell you when I'm going to stop. And all of that started with one drink. I had to leave the school. I burned so many bridges, and of course I was failing out too, right? I didn't want to. I couldn't even be seen there. And that's all from one drink, one sip to try to fit in. And all of a sudden, I'm off to the races, right? And, you know, that's the thing. I thought alcohol gave me wings, but it took away the sky. So, I come back to Atlanta, and my wonderful father he gave me a ride back to Atlanta, who I love so much, and he started taking me to some AA meetings. He's a proud member of this fellowship, and I went to the meetings, but I didn't do any steps. You know, I just kind of showed up, and I was actually able to stay sober for a couple of months. I think, like, I don't know, maybe 2.5 months or so, 2 months. But I didn't do the steps. I didn't get a sponsor. I just showed up at meetings. And again, one night there was a successful kind of business endeavor. And I thought, you know, it just wouldn't be normal if I didn't celebrate this with a drink. So I had one drink, and within, I don't know, then it turned into two drinks, and then probably a third, I can't even remember. Within an hour, I was going to get some substances or a substance to combine with this, and it was like I never stopped, man. And that's the thing, my sponsor says, I love it, we don't press restart, or I don't press restart, I press resume. Whenever I pick up a drink, it's like I never stop. You know, I pick up, and I just press the pause button, and I'm back where I started. This turned into, I don't know, maybe 7 months or so of getting crazy. And I remember the last drink that I had, I was at a bar, and it was a Sunday night, I believe, really late, and I get into a cab. A friend puts me into a cab, and I'm too drunk to tell this guy where I live. So he just takes me to the place that's on my license, which is my mom's house. So I show up there, I don't know, maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, I'm not sure. I think I tried to claw my way into through the screen porch like a raccoon. That did not work. So I ring the doorbell. My stepdad opens the door. He's kind of like, well, what? I don't know, whatever. But my mom comes out, right? And of course, my mom's like Gandalf in that scene of Lord of the Rings. And she's like, "Thou shalt not pass. Explain yourself." And I could not speak. I was too drunk to talk. It's like I needed subtitles at this point, right? I needed that little meow mix ball that just went over every word you say. So I remember coming to, and they're both looking at me saying, "Should we take him to the hospital where my mom is?" And I don't, that's what I remember. And of course, going through my phone the next morning is the worst. It's like I did a telethon of ex-girlfriends, man. It was horrible. Just, man, it's 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. It's just the worst. By the grace of God, I actually got evicted. My roommate and I got evicted from our apartment. So I had to, come back home. My mom took away my car keys and just starts dropping me off at AA meetings. And I remember going to this AA meeting. It's the Northwest group at St. Anne's Church. And I show up, and there was this guy there, and he's really cool, nice guy. And I remember, I don't know, I think about a year before then, or 8 months before then, or something, I had been at a meeting, and he asked me if I ever wanted to go rock climbing with him. And I kind of brushed it off. I'm sure I had more important things to do. Right, and I don't know what got into me, but I went up to this guy after that meeting, and I asked him if he'd be my sponsor. He said, "Sure. You just call me every day and we'll meet once a week." And I thought, I've made a huge mistake. I'm just here for the coffee. But I did it. By the grace of God, I started calling him, working the steps, doing this program. And I started to get some sobriety. It was incredible, actually, because that feeling of not being good enough, that feeling of inadequacy, that horrific anxiety, feeling like I had to calculate every step in a social interaction, that started to get better. I started to get more comfortable around myself, around other people. I started to feel what seemed to be like good about myself. It was kind of like, miraculously, God was restoring me back to sanity, right? And of course, this really kicked in when I started doing the action steps. Now, I wish I just jumped on the fourth step right away and really started cooking there. I thought that one thing that would fix me is if I flew to Colorado to meet a lady that I thought I'd fallen in love with on a bender, which was a horrible idea, especially since she was still drinking and using and I was not. By the grace of God, I stayed sober. I ended up coming home early. But after that, I remember asking him, let's do the fourth step. Let's do that. And that really was a game changer for me. I mean, 4 through 9 is really where the magic starts to happen, right? Where I start to get freedom from the bondage of self. So, by the grace of God, I got a year and a half of sobriety. And life is really starting to get so much better. Dreams that I thought were completely gone, I mean, God gave them back to me in a relatively short period of time, actually. I mean, I thought that I was going to have to settle for a life that I didn't like, a version of myself. In fact, I thought that I was so cooked just from how I had abused my mind and body that I was never going to be back to normal. I mean, I thought I was always going to be a subpar version of myself. And it was a scary place to be. You know, to be 21 years old and think that your best days are behind you, that's pretty sad. You know, to think that you've got nothing left to give the world. And that's where I was at. So, by the grace of God, I was 23, I guess 24 and a half, still sober, some incredible things were really happening in my life. I can really see God working. And it's just amazing that things are really starting to come to fruition. Some dreams, peace of mind, serenity. I'm starting to feel, and I'm comfortable with myself again, which I didn't think that was possible. But I realized into that time period that there was an addiction in the sexual area, and it was every bit as, I believe, on a path destructive is the drinking in different ways, but it was. So, you know, I got some help there and another 12-step fellowship, and by the grace of God, I've been sober from drugs and alcohol, or alcohol from alcohol and drugs for over 9 years, and the other area for 7 years. So that's a big deal for me. So again, it kind of dealing with both of these, all three of these issues, I went from seeing God working in my life to actually feeling Him, to really having a tangible spiritual connection. Like it says in the big book, you know, we'll feel kind of like we're walking on the broad highway of the universe, hand in hand with the Creator. And you know, that's really, I've started to experience that. I mean, and it was really incredible. But there were still many repercussions from my addiction, don't get me wrong. I mean, years after, I think into about 5 or 4 years into sobriety, I couldn't get health insurance because I had an overdose on my record. I had admission to Piedmont Hospital, overdose on my record. Finally, I got health insurance for, I mean, an exorbitant price. I mean, maybe it was like $300 a month. It was crazy. You really, the best day of my life was when I hit my deductible and everything was free. Because I got my insurance company back. We'd be at the club. My friends would be like, Josh, how are we going to get home? I'd be like, why don't we take an ambulance? Because there's nothing more VIP than rolling with the EMT, am I right? Everywhere I went, I made it seem like, yo, put down your wallet, come find everybody in this bar, shots. Flu shots. Yahtzee. Man, I was terrified for anyone to even mention a doctor on me. I got, quote, $1,800 for 2 MRIs in my back. People were like, Josh, you want a Dr. Pepper? I'm like, is there a GoPay? So, all seriousness, so eventually I was able to get health insurance. And but it was just another kind of stigma as a result of this addiction, right? I mean, so I remember a little bit into my journey, I had quite a bit of resentment towards, I guess, towards the church in my youth. Like I said, I came from a mixed household, or I guess the church, and I kind of went to a faith-based a church around here, and really just considered the guy a good public speaker, motivational speaker. What ended up happening eventually was I had a pretty profound connection with an experience with Jesus, and that has drastically, I think, made my life better and made me better at life. It's made my program a lot stronger as well. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I hit my knees. I set a timer for 20 minutes. I pray through that. I typically will actually write out some scripture verses and take notes on it, you know, write out a page. And I'll meditate for a certain amount of time. Typically repeating phrases in my head, or like it could be a scripture verse, it could be something as simple as breathe in God, breathe out me. And what I've also gotten to do in the morning is actually I've been reading 2 pages in some 12-step literature, like the big book or the 12 and 12 and underlying it, and actually taking notes as well. And that's been incredibly powerful in my spiritual journey. I feel like it really turned the signal between God and myself from up from Boost Mobile to Verizon, you know. So it's been very powerful, and I just feel like for me, the closer I get to my higher power, the more exciting life becomes, and that's, you know, really what it's all about for me. I'm not perfect, obviously. You know, I still have regrets. Where are we at time? Cool. I still have some regrets, you know. I mean, I and it's tough for me to get on certain, like, social media things, too, right? I mean, I see how everyone's lives. So now, don't get me wrong, my life is drastically better. It is so, so much better for me 2018 is really off to a tremendous start. God did not just give me my old life back. That would have been tragic. He gave me a brand new one. He didn't give me my old dreams back. He gave me brand new ones. I mean, it's far better than anything I would have wanted for myself coming into this program. Absolutely. But I still have to watch out. I can still, you know, comparison's the enemy of joy. I can't get on social media anymore. I end up comparing myself to everybody. That's true. I actually had to change my Facebook profile name to Nobody. That's right. That's how jealous I got. That way, whenever one of my friends bragged about their six-figure promotion, they could look underneath the post and realize, nobody likes this. So it's interesting. I literally had to set a timer because I get in such bad comparative regret. I've had it happening. I had to set a timer. With each breath in, I'd say, I love you, Jesus. And with each breath out, I'd say, thank you, Jesus, for it. I'd fill in the blank with something I was grateful for. You know, helped me a great deal because I don't want to be one of those people that goes from comparison to regret. Have you ever been in such bad regret you wish you could write a letter to yourself in high school, avoid all your bad decisions? I actually did it. I was like, dear Josh, if you're reading this letter, I'm writing you for the future. So fasten your seatbelt. The year's 2017. You're single, 30, dead broke, and living with your mother. I'm just kidding. You're 31. But if you follow my instructions perfectly, I believe you can chart a new course for your life. First and foremost, stop smoking weed. You know what makes you too paranoid? When you're walking on the beach, turn around, see your own footprints, and think somebody's following you. Secondly, you're an alcoholic, so quit drinking immediately, or else one day you'll be so intoxicated you'll think the highway you're on is the speed limit. When you're on 75, you'll go 75. When you're on 85, you'll go 85. And when you're on 400, you'll go to jail. Lastly, accept the Lord and get help for your sexual addiction. No matter what you think, sleeping with your boss will not advance your career, especially since you're self-employed. Good luck and good night, Josh Harris. All right. So, in all seriousness, recently I moved out to LA for some professional reasons, and it was a pretty cool experience. Don't get me wrong. I ended up moving back here, and I was really struggling with if this was or was not the right decision to make, and it was really eating my lunch. In fact, I've had to get help outside of these 12 steps. I mean, at one point I remember talking to my sponsor about how anxious I was about some of this stuff, and he encouraged me to get help outside of he basically said the 12 steps can't help you with this thing that you're going through, in the sense that I needed to get some outside help, and he was right, and that was incredibly helpful for me. But, you know, I came back to this program, and not this program, to Atlanta, and was in an incredibly anxious state. And I thought that, man, I'd really messed up my life. I'd really made some, you know, the wrong professional decision to move back here. And I think it does say in the book, you know, our lives depend on the constant thought of helping other people, right? So when was in this frightened place when I came back to Atlanta, I ended up trying to, sought God, man, you know. And what did I do? I ended up sponsoring more people in 12-step recovery than I ever had in my life, upping my meetings, upping church services, upping volunteer commitments, upping my, you know, prayer and meditation, and really leaning in to these 12 steps, into this fellowship of recovery and service. And I'll tell you, it's interesting because for me, professionally, I'd say, you know, in a lot of ways professionally, this is the best season of my life I've ever been in. And I'm probably putting less time and effort into it, and more into this program, into these steps, into serving other people. And it's just a reminder for me that God can do more with less of my time if more of that time is given to Him. I've heard this phrase, if I give God 1 hour of my day, He'll give me 23 back. So, you know, I need to remember that. I need to remember who brought me to the dance. I need to, like my sponsor say, look at the track record and remember that this program is a template for infinite growth. And it's the solution to all my problems, you know. And it can point me in the direction of where I need to go, right? So, with that said, you know, I think it's for me, it's this point in my life, it's not about I mean, sobriety is the most important thing, but for me it's about emotional sobriety. And I don't want anyone here to think I'm perfect by any means. I mean, I still massively struggle with anxiety. I really struggle with it way more than I should, considering how God consistently comes through in my life. But I think for me the common denominator is showing up, going to meetings, calling people in this program, working the steps, serving others, prayer, meditation, service work, like I said, and just if I stay a beginner, I don't have to drink today. That's the bottom line, you know. And for me, I'm just so grateful that this program is a template for infinite growth. I can get better at year 10 than I did in year 1. I really believe that in terms of emotional and spiritual recovery. So with that said, I just want to thank you all so much for letting me share my story with you and just let you know I believe the best is yet to come, but one day at a time. Thank you.
Same lazy folks complain today.